This is Icon Art Radio, and I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb, and our special guest today is Ken Dubin, who is now a local artist, was an artist in Chicago, and became fascinated with Fairfield and moved here, and that's really a good story. We love to see that, and we're seeing more and more of that in Fairfield. Artists coming, culturally oriented people coming for the cultural art, the arts, music, poetry, literature, theater colony that we have here.
The vibe.
They're drawn to the vibe. Becoming a cultural magnet. We'll talk more about that. Let me say a few things about what's happening with Icon this month and in coming months.
And we're talking about October 2010, in case you're listening to a rerun of this.
Yes, normally we don't do this. I moved to do this today. Probably it's because we're turning people on to Ken's show at the MUM Gallery. So we're going to get more time specifically. Usually we don't, because sometimes we repeat these shows, and we don't want somebody like, we don't be talking about stuff happening at Icon and in the city when it's 3 years later. So we try to avoid that. But today we're going to get time specific. I'm going to let everybody know that at Icon we have it will be our biannual. We started this last year. We're repeating it again this year.
Semi-annual.
As a fundraiser. What's that?
Semi-annual.
Semi-annual is every...
six
it's
months.
Twice a year?
Yeah.
No, this is biannual.
Oh, it's biannual. Yeah, it's every other
year. I will make
year.
This clear now.
Okay.
That last year we had our first art auction, which was quite successful in raising funds to keep Icon going. And this year we're doing it again because we're kind of in a financial place where we need to push things a little to get some operating expenses to keep Icon going. Being a nonprofit, it's a month-to-month deal to keep it going. That's the way nonprofits are, and so everybody needs to know it has to be community supported. The artists it's very encouraging because artists from all over the state who know how valuable Icon is to them and to the art lovers of the state, they give us art. We have over 100 works of art by over 60 artists from Fairfield and Cedar Rapids and Des Moines and Iowa City and other cities in the state that want to support Icon. So some of the top artists in the state have sent work down at art auctions. Things are offered usually at about the wholesale price as a minimum bid, so you can get some very good deals and help Icon at the same time. So I'll give you the time framework here. We're in 2010, if this is a repeated show, and November 5th, is our art walk, and all this artwork will be displayed all over the entire gallery. November 6th, we will have our final bidding party. So come out on November 6th and see what's available and make your bid. It will all end at 4:00. So get there before 4:00 because we're going to end this thing at 4:00 sharp on November 6th.
And that's a Saturday, right?
That's a Saturday. Art Walk is the first Friday Art Walk of November on November 5th. The next day, November 6th, will be our final bidding day.
And if everything goes according to plan, you're listening to this either the Sunday before that weekend or the Wednesday before Art
right.
Walk.
We're going to have an Icon Art Radio primer here. Icon is short for Iowa Contemporary, which is short for Iowa Contemporary Art, which is a nonprofit organization devoted to expanding art awareness in Southeast Iowa. And our headquarters, although it expands beyond a physical location in terms of that Icon is a lot of art activities, including lots of artistic lectures, workshops, video nights, radio shows are associated with our activities under Iowa Contemporary Art. But our headquarters and our gallery, 58 North Main, Fairfield on the Square. And so we've got some wonderful upcoming shows. Ken Dubin, we're going to bring his show that's over at MUM right now at the library, and we all ought to go out and see it. And we're going to bring that over for a repeat encore performance at ICON in March. We're going to have an experimental film for the film festival in February at ICON. We're not quite sure what will be involved with that, but it'll be a variety of interesting films. We'll have Ken Dubin in March, and we will then have Thomas C. Jackson of Cedar Rapids with his photo collages in April and May. Then we'll have our fun summer fun show, which I'm really looking forward to putting together in the summer. So, and we're talking about a quilt show in the fall they have a quilt show from the quilt organization at the Sondheim Theater, and we have our fancy Des Moines quilt show in October. So we're going to have our own participation in all the quilt activities. And then we will once again have our ICON Invitational, which I didn't mention. December and January of this year, we will have our ICON Invitational. And that comes once a year. The art auction is biannually. We'll do it every other year. And then every other year, we'll have a mask, a community interactive making of masks and different items that we auction off biannually also. Okay, so that we filled you in about ICON. We haven't done that for probably 2 years. And now to our guest, Ken Dubin. Ken, we'll have him describe his work. That's probably the best place to start. But just briefly, I will say he does what I call field paintings. And he does what I call white field paintings, which means form emerging from the white light of pure consciousness and fluctuating of form in that field. And I find them utterly fulfilling to look at. It's like looking at the fluctuations of the ultimate baseline field of consciousness in a kind of frozen and held in the form of a painting. So I love his work. Say a few things about where your work comes from.
Well, I am trying my best to achieve what you've described, and you know the thoughts I had initially when I began making them, and still have to continue making them, do have to do with the idea of this place from a past, and visually hoping the experience that scene works its way into the present and the future. So it has a lot to do with past, present, future, birth, a primordial place coming from that, and then transformation, transcendence, change.
Tell the people the title of the show.
It's called the Emergence Burial Series, 1979 to present. So it was begun quite a while ago. And I wasn't conscious at the very beginning that was the title or at all. That didn't come to later. But it was definitely always about the same thing. And it included white and went from a place of a lot of color. Before the white, it went to white, hit a lot of color.
You were making works that were quite
loaded colorful, with color.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So and how did you suddenly get into the emergence series and go to the white?
Well, what happened was it got to a point that I was making these, you know, colorful paintings and drawings, and I was actually happy with them, and they were successful. I was finally at a place where I felt they were successful, and actually they were starting to sell more too and stuff a bit. But then all of a sudden I would look at them and they disappointed me completely. And I felt that they were relevant. The color had no significance at all. The blue in the paint wasn't supposed to represent sky or water. The red wasn't supposed to suggest anger or fire or whatever. You know, it wasn't, the color was not about anything. So everything became irrelevant. And it was like a shock at the time looking at it. I said, all this stuff I've done, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. It's actually, I'm not happy with it. The fact that, that this is going on in it. So in the studio, I try to figure out a way out of that. How can I get out of this visual imagery in front of me that was all color? And I, in my mind, I remember I went through the different, what colors can I use to get, I should start eliminating. That's the only way, like an eraser eliminates something. And I thought of things like the, is it Rauschenberg that erased de Kooning's drawing? Yeah, yeah, I thought of that. I thought of at the time, I remember reading John Lennon from the Beatles had painted his whole place white. And the reason he did that, he said, was he was cleaning house. And I thought about the, you know, the whole idea of cleaning one's house, that, you know, always hear it's time to clean your house or whatever. Mm-hmm. I thought of the idea that everything, you know, how can I show that everything comes from somewhere? What color is going to represent possibility and potential? And so I thought of, you know, it's, white was also spiritual color. So it became the only color, you know, I could possibly use. I mean, I was forced into using it, really. And I wanted them to be very human paintings. And so along with the white and the spiritual part of it, I would start putting little, like, pencil marks real fine to even suggest body hairs. And maybe there were light pinks. The whites were light, had some pink to them. And here's, and so, but that was coming slowly, and because it was very difficult and scary to go from color that you're very used to, and actually, at, but to that time was going well, and then all of a sudden you're trying to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, a crisis in a way.
Yeah. Well, but, that's, we artists usually give birth.
To I can these relate to that.
Out of crisis, these kinds of
crises. It reminds me of me 10 years ago deciding that my pursuit of music had to be conducted without melody, harmony, or rhythm, which left only timbre, tonality.
Huh.
That's sort of getting down to something elemental, and then seeing how it works all over again.
Starting from the beginning.
Yeah.
Trying to restructure your ideas on...
But you see, I am a minimalist. I'm a lover of minimalism, however you might define that. But at least to me, it's like reduction.
Yeah.
Reducing down to essential experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've been hungry, I mean, because of my love of Zen and pure notes and simplicity. It just has been this experience of the essential has been the most nourishing experience and the most complete and the most whole experience.
Yeah.
So when I see your art, I see the white field, but then you have a full spectrum of colors, like moving like for the first time, and a dynamic going on between the dynamics of color and lines of force. It's like you have the white field and then you set a line of force going, because some of the paintings are more like fluctuating like a waffle pattern or something, just a balanced fluctuation. Some of them, it's like the line of force begins to move and take off in a direction, and then maybe within that painting or maybe the next painting, you quiet it down again, and then it moves out again in a different pattern. And I just love to sit there and let my awareness be quiet at this very essential level of manifestation. And you do it as well, if not better than anyone in this region.
Well, I'm trying to get at the idea of this movement and this idea that it, the viewer can, you know, getting into the work could be taken to thinking about this other space, this idea that you're looking at something, and it does have this change, this potential, this possibility. So what you're describing is the way I'm trying to visually make those things to have movement, so they're not still, completely still.
Mm-hmm.
but then they're supposed to have, you know, some work is still relative to others.
And some feel like you get finely tuned to this level, and some of the paintings just have little bits of color. It feels like a full spectrum of color dancing there, but it's really just a hint of full spectrum. And some of them have more flavors of color this way or flavors of color that way, but oftentimes it's sort of like a balance of full spectrum colors kind of dancing there.
It's not. I try to make it not about the color, so that doesn't overwhelm anybody.
No. It's so. But they're. And you walk in. They're all white. The first thing you feel. White paintings.
Yeah.
And then you're drawn into each world, which is a slightly different quality.
It's really interesting to me because this is the things you're saying sound so much like the things that I'm saying about why I tried to get away from melody, harmony, and rhythm. Because what really excites me about sound, as opposed to liking a particular song or a symphony or something, but what really gets to my favorite parts of my favorite pieces of music are just specific sounds. There's a little thing in Handel's Messiah where this Baroque trumpet holds a long, high note that just sails over the whole orchestra and then ends with da-da-da-dum. And it's the simplest little figure you could ever ask for. But when I'm listening to the Messiah, I wait for that note for the entire performance until I can hear that note again. Part of it's hearing it in context. Part of it's just that sound is so perfect. And there are other sounds that are like the sound of a musical instrument or the sound of a branch in a tree creaking in the wind, whatever it is, that when it's not buried in the context, it's magnificent. And all you need is, I mean, I've started putting melody back into my compositions, my abstract compositions, but it'll be, you know, in a 4 or 5 minute piece, there might be three notes, but boy, do they stand out. When you suddenly hear a definitive pitch followed by another definitive pitch, you have suggested music in a field that wasn't music. And if you just stop right there and don't develop it and don't let it go any farther, the listener goes away with this kind of secret knowledge about music that you can't have when you get caught up in a whole piece with a beginning and a middle and an end and all that incredible complex structure that music has. And I kind of sense the same thing in your work that I see. I mean, I've admittedly only seen them on the screen, but it's something emerging from the field. And the field is all possibilities. I mean, it's the archetype for a painter, for heaven's sakes. It's, you know, staring at the white canvas, or for the writer staring at the white piece of paper, or the white screen on the computer. What can emerge from that is absolutely limitless. It could be absolutely anything.
And each individual artist, or whoever they are in whatever walk of life, is going to bring their future, their personal life to it.
Even in that first move,
that's right.
The flavor of the individuality of that particular artist is emerging at a very fine level, and that's very cool.
And I hope that, you know, people of, you know, anybody, not just artists, would bring their own life to it, and, you know, because everything comes from something. Whether it's just the most basic thing. And I'll tell you what else influenced the work is architecture also influenced the work. And when you go on a dig, at the very beginning of the dig, you have maybe nothing but dirt or ground. But a little bit into that dig, you're going to have little protrusions, either solid of rock of some sort or ceramic, but the layperson like myself wouldn't know it. Discolorations in the surface. But then somebody else with knowledge is going to say, oh, we're probably above a kitchen. This is what happens when they might have been cooking, and these are ceramics. Maybe they're bowls to eat out of.
Yeah,
no, I hadn't thought
that. Yeah, archaeology is an interest. It's like the you know, whole civilizations just sort of emerging out of dirt. It's
right,
just
right.
It's
I hadn't
nothing
even
with
of this.
hints of an entire world inside.
So it goes with that same. Well, that's definitely what was, you know, the basis too for that getting the work to the to where it's at.
That's a great concept. I love that.
And then another, what I'll tell you, what finally got me over the hump, though, going really slow and being very insecure, making them for, and they were half color and half white at the beginning for a while, and little by little more white. But when I was at the gift shop in the Art Institute of Chicago, and I came across, I was looking through the books, this artist I never heard of before. This was 1980, and it caught me the cover because it was a lot of white paint, and I looked through it, and it's like one after the other is white, white. It was a lot more than white, but that's what you get at first when you first right. see them. But you know who it was? It was Cy Twombly.
Yeah.
And I was blown away. I was, you know, again, this was major to, you know, a major thing to see. And I was like, now I could go full speed ahead. Now there's nothing stopping me because I don't have to be.
And this is an example of how one artist, well, it shows how artists will be like discovering without any contact from within themselves, some idea what's time has come. Mm-hmm. And then when they meet each other, when they find out about each other, it's like amplification and permission is given. And it's a very important part of the process. Because otherwise you can create a lot of doubts within yourself that will stop this thing that wants to come out from happening. And then suddenly you realize there's someone else that's doing it too, and someone else, and someone else. And there's this sort of like a green light given.
Yeah.
That's like, and you get a collective like that going, and a whole art movement can result
absolutely.
From it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we haven't quite reached that critical mass here in Fairfield, but it's coming. It could happen.
Now, what you were talking about, the timber and the blank canvas, it made me think also of standing in front of a blank canvas and having the experience, and this is also referring to your experience, in front of the blank canvas, and it seemed like anything I did to it destroyed the perfect beauty that was already there.
I know, I have felt that way a lot. That's sort of one of the reasons I didn't keep painting. I just felt terrible about what I was doing. I didn't feel like I was contributing anything.
Yeah, it's true.
And another, I've known a number of really high level glass artists in my lifetime.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen the beautiful things that they create that are fantastic. I mean, some of the best that's being done today. With your caning and your pieces of colored glass and you're creating imagery. But I always felt like none of it compared to the pieces of glass. Because I would go with these friends of mine to the wholesale glass place, and the pieces of glass come, these antique glass and all of the glass they make for stained glass work. They're probably about, 30 inches by 24 by 30, a sheet, maybe a little bit bigger. And I would pull these, while they were buying their glass, I would go out and I'd be pulling these sheets out and putting them in they have a window usually there where you can look at the sheets. Mm-hmm. I would be just going out and looking. And I felt like nothing compared to what I was getting delivered
just
by this single piece of
color,
glass that you could do with it.
Yeah.
So we're all kind of a little bit singing to the choir here together about an area of art that's so dear to us.
Yeah.
And you want to call it essential, reductionist, minimalist.
Yeah, deducing everything down to that essential place.
So I saw your show. I must have said this in the beginning of the show. I'm lost now. Over at the MUM gallery in the library. And this is Ken Dubin, by the way, if you've just tuned in late into the show. A Chicago artist who has moved to Fairfield because of the magnetic quality of the Fairfield art scene, and his show is up at the library on the MUM campus. It's a very nice space over there, and a lot of people don't visit it, and I want to encourage people to enjoy this resource that we have here in town at the library, which is open, I believe, early in the morning until 9:30 at night, like most days.
Monday through Friday, I believe, pretty much 10 to 4, you'll definitely see it then. And then from on Saturday, 10 to... Oh, what am I talking about? 10 to 9, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, up to in the evening. And then at something like 4 o'clock on Saturday.
Saturday, 10 to 4, you would definitely...
Yeah. So,
I'd like to also say, which... how can I forget? Is the other thing that got me going originally on the work also was that I had been practicing TM for quite a few years. And I started to also think, how can I find this, you know, this transcendent place to go to in my work? So, which also fits with the whole idea of getting to this place that we've been talking about, this kind of essential place. And so really, you know, at the time I thought about that when I was making them, that, you know, I could somehow bring this in, the spiritual and this whole idea of how you go into ourselves and into this quiet space, you know, how could I make that part of the work? And then I think as the years went on, later on, maybe there's actually more influence from that, from the TM on my work than I originally thought at all. Mm. So that's actually why I was excited and wanting to show my work here at the MUM. And so when I first came here, it was, I had really never been here and heard about Fairfield. And I wanted to really see if I could get to show the work at MUM, because I figured, well, this would be, you know, a good place to show the work.
Absolutely.
So that it could be seen from this point of view also. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And of course, it's always more fun if you meet the artist before you go to the show. Than you.
So I'll just say it comes down on November 14th. It's open mostly quite many hours during the day, up until 9 o'clock at night, 4 o'clock on Saturdays, closed on Sundays. Thank you so much, Ken, for bringing this to Fairfield and coming to Fairfield and for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Everybody should see the auction going on at Eichen right now. It's very, very worthwhile and worth seeing.
Great. Yeah, I think so.
It's a great show.
It's turned out to be a nice show.
It's a great show. Yeah.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.